don't use AI if you don't need to use AI, right? And
right.
That, which is weird for an AI company, but I'm very much of the opinion if you use the right tool for the job. So if AI is the right tool for the job, we want to use it. But ultimately, everything that you present should be explainable and should be citable to a specific real world thing. And once you do that, that solves a lot of your problems. And also, again, like I said, you should have a human at some point looking at this and making decisions both off that, who's ultimately responsible for it. But they should be asking these questions.
Global companies face unprecedented risks and challenges in today's economy. To mitigate these legal and economic risks, companies are rapidly embracing and elevating the importance of robust ethics and compliance programs to promote positive corporate citizenship. On Corruption, Crime, and Compliance, you'll hear from industry leaders and insiders about how to create effective ethics and compliance programs that will mitigate risks and maximize financial performance. Here's your host, Michael Volkoff.
Welcome, everybody. I'm really happy to have Christian Focacci back with us. He's our tech guru. And for all you podcast listeners, he is our technology explainer because he can explain things really well about AI, due diligence, and where it's going. Christian, it's always great to see you. We're going to talk about also not only your view of the industry, where AI is going, but also to talk about Threat Digital, your terrific product, which I will talk about in a minute or so. But first off, it's great to see you. Thanks for being here. And I want to open this up to a discussion about what we're seeing on AI. And I'm not talking about all the blowhardy risk, you know, articles that are written about how AI is going to take over the world. I just saw Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, and, you know, AI is the bad guy in that. So anyways, great to see you.
Good to see you too, Michael.
But tell me, besides Tom Cruise winning, what are you seeing right now in terms of AI, where we're going with it? It seems to me to be moving extremely quickly now. And the technology is, and lawyers are doing their best to stay up with it, let alone all the business, all the consumers.
Yeah, it's a challenge. So my job every day is to run an AI company, and I probably spend 20 to 30 minutes a day, maybe 5 to 6 hours a week, trying to keep up with new AI updates and just keeping up on the news. It's a daunting task if it wasn't your full-time job. So it's really challenging, and that makes it even more challenging where the market puts out a lot of marketing material and that's kind of unclear of what's actually happening in the world.
Right.
But you're 100% right. It's been moving incredibly fast. So we spoke probably a little over a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago. The big changes on the technical perspective within that year, models have gotten better, which is a big deal because we weren't really sure, are they going to plateau completely? Is it just, this is the AI we're going to have? But they have gotten better. There's been more advances.
When you say models, Christian, are we talking about like machine learning, how the technology is able to process or learn from information or data?
That's exactly right. So kind of if we take a step back, everyone today, when we talk about AI, we're talking about large language models, which right. are machine learning models that have basically been taking a lot of text, usually from the internet, usually from books, all different sources. They've looked at that text. They've been trained on patterns. Unstructured human text, and there's a model that exists in the world, and it's static. It doesn't actively get trained, and that's kind of the biggest misunderstanding that I see with when people say machine learning. They think it's an active thing, where when you interact with ChatGPT, it's always learning. It's not. The model is completely static. It doesn't change at all. It doesn't learn new things. Once it's built and trained, the parameters are the parameters, and it's static. Those large language models are provided from large kind of frontier AI companies because they have the most money to train them. And, you know, it's prohibitively expensive for most companies. So you're looking at OpenAI, Microsoft, Google. There's some open source providers now, specifically coming out of China, but they release these models. So pretty much any solution that people are selling with AI and LLMs are a company that's built something that accesses one of these services from one of these big companies. And that's when we say models, it's these services that are offered have improved significantly from even a year ago. And there are ways that companies can run this on their own software, but you need a lot of, or hardware, you need a lot of computing power to do it. And those models still aren't as good as the frontier service models provided by the big players. So almost always you're going to be interacting with an OpenAI, a Google, or a Microsoft behind the scenes.
Right. I mean, Microsoft is kind of a leader in this area, correct? In terms of they've invested a lot in this.
They've invested a lot, and they're kind of playing both sides. So they've invested a lot in OpenAI, and so they have a stake there. But now what they've done is they're kind of trying to make their platform where they can have any model on it, and you could access it through their kind of hub. So you can access OpenAI models through Microsoft. I think they just added Grok, which is the X's model, and there's a lot of other ones, Anthropic. So now they're trying to kind of have their hub where you just use them as the access point, and then they have all the other models trained and you can kind of pick which one you want. So they're not choosing one of them. You can be a lot of them.
So the other thing that I'm seeing is, you know, a lot of companies, big companies now have these AI committees because, and we'll talk about the risks in a second, but it seems to me like what's getting established are almost like risk committees for AI and data. Now, I get data privacy and all our data privacy controls and our mapping and everything that we've done. But what I think is really interesting now is seeing governance around AI within a company. And in some ways, that's a good thing, but in some ways, it slows everything down.
Yeah. From a year ago today, it's completely different. A year ago, we would onboard a customer and go through traditional vendor onboarding. Nothing new completely. Right. Oh, you're a SaaS vendor, you're a cloud vendor. These are the forms you fill out. Now, every company above a certain size, every large company for the most part, has specific policies and regulations on how they treat AI vendors, and you go into a different pool. And some of the largest ones, they have policies, they meet once a month, you have to go before them, it has to be approved. Right. We're seeing kind of like a 3 to 4 extension in our sales cycles, just from
3 to 4 months,
right? We sell a lot to banks and a lot to large companies. So it's not unusual to have a 6 to 12 month sales cycle beginning to end. That's kind of par for the course, but probably a quarter of that time now we're seeing extended through the AI. And in some cases, we've done proof of concepts and trials, and the stakeholders, they love it. And they say, we want to move forward, but it's an AI product. So we have to do X, Y, and Z, or we don't even want to go down that road because we tried it once and we know how onerous it is.
Yeah. Not to put you on the spot, Christian, but are these processes, these extra layers of processes, are they justified in your mind based upon the risk?
So I would say no. I would say no, because a lot of them they're treating AI like it's a completely different thing that
didn't exist.
It didn't exist, right? And it's presenting challenges that you weren't facing already. So like the big questions are around, are you training on the data that we're providing you? Are you using the data with any other customers? Where is the data going downstream? So I mentioned those large providers. We work with OpenAI, we work with Microsoft. Do they know our data, right? If you're working with OpenAI, does OpenAI know XYZ Bank gave us this information, do that? So those are all the right questions to ask, and you need to ask them. The reason I said no is because those are still just kind of data privacy questions already, right? You should have known that before, what the vendors are doing with the data, how they're using it. There are some more nuanced things of, is the AI making a decision, right? And I think there's actually has been less focus on that, but that's probably where the focus should be. And we are of the opinion, me personally, that the AI should never be making a decision, right? There should be a human always making a decision. AI's role is to aggregate information, present things, summarize things. But ultimately, we shouldn't have a computer making decisions that affect people. And that's just like a philosophical decision.
You've hit the nail on the head in terms of the risk area. The risk area is when you use a technology to make a decision, to exercise discretion. That's where you can be called into question later on, if I'm doing that, about how do I know my data was accurate? How do I know there's no bias that's built in the sources that I'm relying upon? And what I like about what you're saying is your job is to aggregate the information, present it in a consumable way, in my view, and help the person not to make the decision, but provide that information so they can make a decision.
Yeah, that's right. And our core is built on kind of a few principles. One of them is one, don't use AI if you don't need to use AI, right? And right. Which is weird for an AI company, but I'm very much of the opinion if use the right tool for the job. So if AI is the right tool for the job, we want to use it. But ultimately, everything that you present should be explainable and should be citable to a specific real world thing. And once you do that, that solves a lot of your problems. And also, again, like I said, you should have a human at some point looking at this and making decisions both off that, who's ultimately responsible for it. But they should be asking these questions. I think there's just the timing around it, and they treated that it's such a kind of special animal today that is probably going to go away. And we're, I would say, at the peak.
I think the controls that are in place reflect, when you see too much, it reflects a misunderstanding of what the technology actually really does and what the risks are. And the risk, I get the risk. You and I are totally in agreement on this. When you're generating content or putting content together, you better make sure it's accurate.
Yep.
And there should be a process to double check that somehow, to make sure it's accurate, because that's where people are getting into trouble, is when they promote it or just turn it around, cut and paste and put it into something, and then they get called on it.
Yeah, and I think that's educational. I think that'll go away as people understand how these technologies fail. So it's not even their fault, right? You see this thing, it seems magic, it's answering questions. It's so new. It's almost like the early days of social media. People overshared things because they didn't really understand what these companies are storing all this information, using it to make algorithmic decisions that manipulate us. And there's a lot of problems with it. I think LLMs are going through that, and they're just, the technology is so early, but they have failure mechanisms, and it's really important to understand how your tools fail. But at the end of the day, they're just tools. They're not magic. And that's my biggest kind of educational point when I'm talking about this, is explaining exactly how it works through the whole process. So they know this isn't magic. It's a part of a pipeline of data and decision-making, and this is how it works. And you can trust that it's going to be the same way every time, and trust where it fails and where it's successful. Like, people fail in certain ways.
Let me ask you this, though, and I hate to put you on the spot with sort of an educational question. What we now hear is the new hot topic is, you know, generative AI and the risks of content and all that stuff is inaccurate or whatever. I mean, are we using the term AI now to include, to cover that generative AI, or do you need to use that lingo when you're speaking about it?
So I fought for years against saying AI in general. So I've been in this space for a while. I've had AI products and marketing, machine learning products now for over a decade. And I've historically always fought against saying it. Never say AI. It's because it's, you know, misleading, it's not clear. I've changed. AI now, I say large language models, just is the kind of common term for AI. And that includes generative AI too, because they're all kind of part of that same world. And when I say large language models, it's like a lot of words and people don't understand it. So now I just refer to anything that's built on what I consider modern AI technology, which is everything past really 2020, after GPT-3 came out, AI, right? I'm saying, just let's all agree, large language models, generative AI, we can just call it this AI. And it's really, you know, we could keep moving the goalposts forever, right? It's not sentient. Yeah. It's not this. It doesn't really learn. For all intents and purposes, if someone in 1990 or any year saw this technology, they would think it's what that definition of AI is. So now I just refer to everything using generative AI and language models as AI.
Well, Christian, to put you even more on the spot, let me ask for your prediction. What is this going to look like? AI, and then we'll get to, I want to talk about Threat Digital, but what's it going to look like in a year or two? Or when we talk the next time in a year, what's on the books now to change? Where do you see this? I mean, this tool is moving fast.
Moving fast. And even just, we've kind of order of magnitude, like a year ago. So just kind of so people understand what our tool does is we work with third-party risk, AML, KYC. You want to know about potential risk issues with vendors or customers, you can use our tool to put in a name of a company or individual. We pull in all this information, we use AI to review it, and we basically give you a summary of red flags or things you might care about. And then we also let you do monitoring on those names. So a year ago, we were able to do this, and it worked really well, but maybe we would generate like a page of content on a search focus. One of the big changes, like in the weeds for the last year, is just context windows, which is how much information can you put inside the language model. request for it to review and summarize has expanded. It's gone from like 8,000 tokens or like 5,000 words to hundreds of thousands or even millions of words. So our reports now have expanded in depth and coverage. A year ago, we were at page. Now we could generate 10-page reports, 20-page reports that go in depth on different parts of information. So we're going to keep seeing that. So that's kind of the big change over the last year. Where things are going, I think we're going to see these AI services chained together a lot more, and we're going to see new things. Because in like isolation, if you said, okay, here's these 10 search results about Christian Focacci, have an AI review each one, determine if it's relevant, and do a summary. That's a valuable thing. That's what thousands of people do today. And that's great. But now what you could actually do is then say, look at these 10 search results. Now find anyone who's related to Christian Focacci, extract them, run their names through the same system and do it recursively. And now what you're able to start to do is you could start to chain these calls and this technology together. It's still deterministic where it's more workflow and it's making a decision, but you can then make a thing that's greater than the sum of its parts. And it's not just like a 0.1 point search. You could look at 10 things and then say, okay, and if you find an address, hit the Google Maps API and pull a street view of that address. If you find a company name, search a corporate record database, right? So what's going to happen is you're going to have AI as the hub, and then you're going to have different tools. Could be web search, corporate record search, all these different searches that are data sources. And then you basically are going to have the AI look at something, and you're going to instruct it based on what we care about, if we care about third-party risk, due diligence, to extract relevant things that we care about and prompt it certain ways. And then that can trigger more actions. And there's going to kind of be these Rube Goldberg-ish behind the scenes.
That is amazing. I mean, the potential of that. Let's take a step back because we'll get to this. Look, we use Threat Digital. And Threat Digital, that's your product. You plug into a lot of third-party risk management companies and platforms. They use your service. But Threat Digital can give us a quick and accurate readout on due diligence information with citations to sources. So we're not just taking it on faith. And it's amazing what you've built. And I get it why all the companies are using it. What you're telling me, though, is in the future, it's going to be able to do, number one, more thorough reports. And that, to me, is very valuable to compliance for documentation purposes. Now, I've got documentation of exactly all the information we knew at that time. Let's say we onboarded somebody or there's a notice about somebody. But now what you're talking about is I put in a name, a date of birth, whatever, all the identifiers, I get all this information. But if we start linking services together, it's like thinking what my next step would have been in making a request. In other words, oh, there's this address. Show me where this address is. But now what you're telling me is this string of AI functionality is basically doing what a human does in terms of putting together all the issues they want to analyze and identify about this person or about this company.
That's exactly right. And what we found is we've benchmarked kind of the gold standard in the information retrieval world, especially for due diligence, is human research. So that's the gold standard, humans looking, running research. And when we benchmarked the solution against human due diligence reports, what we found is about 88%, we find the red flags that the human researchers find. So the question is, okay, where is that kind of gap that we're not 100%? Even though we're doing it immediately, it's 1,000 times less expensive, it happens in real time, but where's that gap? And the gap is always almost not on the search focus itself. We search for the company, we are exceedingly good at finding the right information on that company. What happens is that company is owned by this person or another company, and that company is owned by a Russian oligarch. And then that is a red flag. And that's where that small gap, that 12%, usually fits in. It's those related parties. It's those ancillary things that right now humans are still like, they kind of are looking and they're like, oh, I saw this company. Let me find the ownership of that company. Then let me run this search.
But I know
it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, but Christian, I know a company that's doing that, just that, what you talked about, the 12%, the related parties. But they're not anywhere close to your functionality I mean, it's bulky, it's cumbersome. It's not anything like the simplicity or ease of use that you've created with Threat Digital. You know what I'm saying? And I think you're going to be, frankly, to me, that's an information issue and whether it's retrievable. First off, is the data even kept? Some countries you can't get beneficial ownership information to figure this all out. But my hope is that with your tools, you're going to be able to figure a lot of that out just through all the information you get already.
And you hit the nail on the head. Is the information there? And that's, we could have a whole other podcast about beneficial ownership. I have a lifetime of experience trying to find ownership of companies that doesn't exist anywhere in the world. And everyone, especially in the third party risk space, that's the number one thing you hear. Can you give us ownership? Everyone thinks there's a silver bullet on the data side. And other vendors are like, yeah, we have that. No one has it. And no one has it because it doesn't exist, right? It's a private company. The owners aren't registered. Or if they're in the BBI.
It's
a shell company that connects to somewhere else. Right. It just doesn't exist. So there's no data solution because there's no data to be have. And I've gave up that fight. Like I gave up not calling it AI. I gave up that fight a long time ago. I just said, sure, go with one of these data providers. If it solves it, your problem. But yeah, if the information is there, we can find it, right? And we could actually now start to do more, right? Because a human, the advantage of AI is you could do it at scale and you could do it in parallel. So even a human report, and the human reports are very, very good. If they're going to look at run internet searches, how many internet searches are they going to run? Or look at, right? 10, 20, 100. Right. In the AML KYC space, usually, because it's different than third-party risk, it costs money and there's constraints. It's usually look at the first page. Run a search on Christian Picacci, look at the first page of Google results. Is there anything bad? If not, sign off on it. But with AI, that limit doesn't exist, right? I can look at 10,000 search results and pull one of those things out. Right. So the advantage is now what we're doing is we're actually expanding the scope of things we look at. And that's why you kind of led into the segue of like, oh, AI is taking everyone's job and, you know, all that kind of stuff, workforce. But what's actually happening is no one knows. So the first thing is what actually is happening is no one knows what's going to happen with this in the future. But the second thing is it's very conceivable that there's just more work because before we were looking at 10 things. Now we're looking at 10,000 things. See, and maybe there's more things to find and that causes more risks to think about. And it could trigger a whole other cascading effect of industries and things like that.
I am convinced that all the fears of loss of jobs in the white collar sector because of AI is overblown. To me, it's another productivity tool that's going to make all of us more efficient and effective. And we're going to be more productive. We're going to be able to do more things in the given amount of time. It's interesting you say the gold standard is human due diligence. And that's because there's an exercise of discretion. And supposedly us humans know what's important. And I get that. Like whenever I did research, I was always worried, was I missing something? And I think what AI gives us is a comfort to know that, and I'll depend on your judgment, that we have everything here and it's being searched. And if it's there, we found it. Now, when I have all the information in front of me, I can exercise discretion and feel comfortable about it. But that to me is an ideal. That could be a great objective that we have, is to give people that comfort. You know, I don't do Google searches anymore. I've stopped doing them. They're absolutely less productive than using AI.
Yeah, that is 100% right. And to that point, our largest cohort of users, not by volume, but as far as companies, are due diligence firms. And that's why people aren't going away either, because due diligence firms are using our tool and humans are very adaptable, right? They're saying, and that was probably the biggest, when I founded the company, one of the biggest reasons I wanted to pursue it, aside from the technology is just really amazing. I would start showing it to people who do research for a living and they wanted to sign up for it. Historically, that group of users is almost impossible to sell to because in their mind, one, there's a possible threat of technology taking their job. And two, there's kind of like, they think they can find everything all the time, right? It's just the way it is. Their job is to find things. So they're always kind of skeptical. The fact that that group of users saw this and said, we're going to sign up was kind of the big trigger point where I said, there's really something here because historically I've never been able to sell to them. And then once you get the corporate compliance, who's much less discerning and, you know, they don't have the time to do that. it's like way overkill for what they need.
But I think the threat digital capability that you've built and where it's going to become even more and more important to the due diligence companies, because their ability to innovate now is dependent upon your innovation. And they're not going to do this themselves. They're not specialized like you.
Yeah, and we're enabling them to offer completely new services as well. So there's the normal service of save us research time, which is fine, but it's honestly not that interesting to them. They already make a margin on due diligence reports. How much time are they saving? They like that. There's the value add of finding things that they might not have been finding. That's kind of more important because their whole job is finding things. But the most interesting thing is we've seen them release things like ongoing monitoring, which they've never had before, because you can do it at scale. So due diligence historically has been point in time. We're going to search Christian Focacci today. We're going to run this research. Maybe we're going to do it 1, 2, or 3 years, depending on the risk rating of him, a high risk, medium, low risk. But it's still that point in time. What they can now do, because we offer a platform, is they can offer their customers, we are going to do the initial search and use AI and try to find everything. But we're going to let you know if this company or individual pops up with any risk events within the next year until you do the next level of due diligence. So there's like a whole new set of products and services that are being built with our technology. And that's one of the really exciting things about what we're working on, because I see all these companies launching services that are based on our technology. And our the way we make it available is through application programming interface and API. We have a user interface as well, but most of our volume comes with other companies connecting their software to our basically engine, and then we're powering what they do.
Well, we get adverse media hits after due diligence, but what is conducted, and there's a notification, okay, there was a bad article about Mike. But what I think you're talking about is an even broader range of notification. I mean, imagine we have all the AI information that we need to monitor everything. It's incredible when you're talking about it.
It's broader and you look at less, which is one of the most important things. Because historically, you could always find out what, okay, Mike did this, Mike did this. But any volume, when you're talking about tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of names, no one has the resources to look at all the things Mike did every day, right? And there's a lot of different Mikes. What the AI has really done is said, we can look at this and we can look at even more information, and we're going to give you 1% of the results, because Christian Focacci works at a corruption investigation company. He's worked in anti-money laundering. He's on the corruption broadcast. There's all negative words that are going to come up with this, like legacy tools. Now the AI, if you search my name in our system, you get no results when you're looking for something adverse. Wow. Even though you get dozens and dozens of articles about me being in this industry, doing investigative money, it's smart enough to say, this mentioned he was on the corruption podcast, but that's not him doing anything wrong. And that is the real game changer.
That sounds amazing to me, because honestly, there are some platforms that are out there where people get inundated with these adverse media hits that are irrelevant.
Right, exactly.
And it takes, and one person, this was at a company a couple of years ago, was overwhelmed and their whole job was just going through those. Now, don't you think what you're talking about, that eliminates that problem completely?
It's incredible. And it's not just on the adverse media, it's the sanctions results as well. So we do structured data and unstructured data. Structured data is all the list screenings. What we're doing is when you put AI on top of sanctions, OFAC hits and things like that, you're looking at like an 80, 90% reduction in things you have to look at. Because it's not just using the name match, right? It's like, okay, Chris and Christian, here's the name match, look at this result. It's using the context of what's in the alert. And it says, well, this is not the same person based on location, the middle name, all these kind of different things. And some of that you could do rule-based, but there's a whole series of alerts that get generated, just low-quality alerts. And we look at them,
we
know they're low-quality. It's not the same person in the same location with the same name. It's like very clearly false positives. AI is exceedingly good at getting rid of those. And most of our customers use our solution to look at the lists, and then they basically have an AI do a level one review on it. So that's it looks at it, and it says 80, 90% of the initial alerts, low confidence that's a match. You don't even need to look at them. My prediction in the next 5 years, every name matching system is going to be rule-based and LLM-based. Rule-based in that it compares the names, how similar they are, and then looks at like, you know, things like dates of birth and ages, and then also a contextual review with AI, because it just works We might have been the first to do it, but a lot of people do it now. It just works so well.
Here's the thing. There's going to be an elimination of this term. It's called, and I hear it all the time, a fuzzy match. Yeah. Okay. If I hear about another fuzzy match, AI is going to get rid of that, because what you're saying, yeah, you can have rules for the name and it gets through the rules. Okay, I get that. But having the context to, that's thinking like a human, but a rational human in how we decipher information.
It's going to get to the point where the only alerts are generated are going to be the ones that are basically unknowable, right? Which is another problem. They're the worst alerts to look at, because it's like, okay, here's Mike Volkoff in the same location. That's the same age.
Right. You didn't know he was doing this, you know, blowing firecrackers off on everybody's house. You know, so I get it. I mean, this is exciting to me. And I think ultimately we're going to have real-time due diligence and real-time monitoring, that it just goes on and on, so that if anything changes about anybody, we're alerted to it in an efficient way. And that, if you're saying that can be done in the next 5 years, that will be so productive for everyone. We need to know who we're dealing with. Our company needs to know everybody we're engaged with and who we're working with. And what better way than what you're talking about?
Do you think that makes more work or less work than we have today?
Less.
You think?
Absolutely. Yep. Because what it means is a manager or person responsible for this function has to know how to prioritize the risk and who should be doing what and how often. You know, these settings of 80% matches versus 70% matches, those days are going to be gone. And I think we may have something where we say our risk sensitivity is a little higher than in a certain area, but I think we're going to get to a point with this. And I'm basing this on my legal compliance, working with your Threat Digital, seeing what you're doing. And I think where this is going, it's going to make us much more productive. And I think it's going to put more responsibilities on corporate governance. Now, here's the real interesting issue is, to the extent there's government enforcement. And now the question is, what did you know about this third party? Or what did you know about this person violating sanctions or whatever? This is where it's going to be careful. You got to be careful to manage the information. Don't put information in your system or into your documentation unless you know you're reviewing, like it's being seen, it's being reviewed. You can't just say we have it all and it's all in here in this drawer here. You have to use it. You have to make it functional for yourself and exercise what you call the human discretion part. We can't replace that, is what you told me. And that, I think you're right, because those are judgment calls that are made by people in the end on risk.
That's right. Even we do this monitoring, and we could do monitoring continuously, but a lot of times it doesn't actually make sense to do it continuously today.
Right.
Because nobody's going to look at the output, right? Do you want news every single day? You have a two-person compliance team. It makes more sense to wait a week or two or a month and let it aggregate and then summarize it all into a digest each month instead of getting a continuous feed of alerts.
Yeah, and we make the information gathering process reflect what our risk concern is. Then it becomes more efficient all the way through. And that's what I think we're going to see. Well, Christian, this has been fantastic. I could go on and on. This is really interesting to talk to you about. Threat Digital, everyone, is the product to check. Threat Digital. Christian, if people want to get in touch with you to see the product or to read and learn more about it, how do people get in touch with you?
So you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active there. You can go to our website, which is threat.digital, or you can email directly at chris@threat.digital.
All right. And we'll bug you down the road to come back and talk to us again. Hopefully some of our predictions have come true. If not, we'll delay it. Okay.
There you go.
Thanks, Christian.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support the show is by subscribing on your favorite listening platform. To learn more and connect with Michael Volkoff, go to volkovlaw.com.